been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win.
You are listening to the Seattle Shrimp Tank, coming to you live every other Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time from the 505 Broadway Studios. I am Brad Berger, co-hosting with Dan Whedon, and you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes so you never miss an episode. If you are subscribed, we want to thank you, and we also want to ask you to please rate our podcast on iTunes. Your feedback helps us grow and improve. So, Dan, good Wednesday to you.
Hello, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, how's the last 2 weeks treated you?
It's been eventful. You know, one of the things that I've noticed, I've been busy. I've had my head down pedaling, and that's a good thing. And
it you didn't run into anything, did you?
I did not run into anything. Just all good stuff. But one of the things is I did take my head up from time to time to observe what was going around me. Boy, there seems to be a lot of stressed out people.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, you know, I think there have been a few things in current events. Obviously, the most notable since the last time we got together was the inauguration.
Yes, inauguration of new President Donald Trump. Yes.
Yeah. So that I think that half the country's happy about that, and the other half seems to be pretty wigged out.
And we have a new hashtag. Hashtag alternate facts. That was trending the day after. So anyway,
But you know, here's one of the good things about that.
What's that?
There is hope for us, because maybe with the new rearrangement of how the press, I don't know if we're considered to be press, but how the press is going to be handled at the new White House, there's an opportunity. There might be a day for us to go and
participate. We could be Shrimp Tank media members.
Absolutely. We could get media badges. I'm sure Amber, executive producer Amber, could hook us up with some press badges, whether they're legitimate or she made them. Nonetheless.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Hashtag alternate facts.
But, you know, there have been some other things that have caused some stress, and you and I were talking a little bit about that earlier.
Well, if we did happen to go to Washington, D.C., and we got stuck on a plane on a tarmac or waiting to board on a United flight, and it happened to be last week, we might have been stressed. Because as you probably heard, I think somebody's computer somewhere went out in Chicago, and so it shut down all domestic flights for United. You heard about that.
I did indeed. It did make the news. Despite all the other things that were going on, I did catch that.
Well, I have to tell you, there have been times I have been stuck both on a tarmac and waiting because of that type of thing, and people really get stressed. And you know, and sometimes I have to look back and say, how bad really is this? I'm sitting comfortably, but I'm just waiting. And the waiting, as Tom Petty says, is the hardest part. But I have a way to get out of that. You know what it is?
Listen to the Shrimp Tank podcast.
Listen to the Shrimp Tank podcast. Look, if you're going to be sitting there anyway, you should go back and listen. It should be on your iTunes. You should be subscribed, and you can be listening to the dulcet tones of Brad and Dan.
And once everybody has listened to them as many times as they care to, because I know they're listening more than once.
Yeah.
What could they do next?
Well, you know, once you've had your fill of us, ironically, our guest can probably help out with that. You know, audiobooks and podcasts kind of run down the same lines. You can access either one whenever you want. And our guest today is Nick Johnson, and I want to tell you how I know Nick, and then you can go into talking a little bit more about him. But Nick is in the middle of reinventing himself, and we'll talk a little bit about reinvention. He's in the middle of reinventing himself, and he and his co-founders have started a company called Libro.fm. Nick, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Before we have you talk a little bit more, I'm going to tell you how I know Nick. Nick and I are in Rotary together. And in fact, a funny coincidence is his dad and I, when I was a young guy in Rotary in a different club, His dad was one of the old guys in Rotary, not too old, but I've been in Rotary with both Nick and his dad. Nick is going to tell us a really cool entrepreneurial life, and I'm going to let you tell people a little bit more about him.
Yeah, so I'd like to read a little bit about Nick. Nick Johnson is the creative director at Libro.fm. It's a Seattle-based startup that provides independent bookstores the ability to sell digital audiobooks. He is also the owner. Now, I need some help with this, Nick, because we had a debate over this.
I won,
this.
By the way. I just want you to know I was right.
So is it SEMA? Thank
it
you.
It is SEMA.
So he is also the owner of SEMA Creative, a branding and marketing firm based out of Paulsbo, Washington. If you've never been to Paulsbo, Washington, for those listening, you've got to come up, visit us. We'll give you a tour of the Shrimp Tank Studios. We'll also probably take you up to Paulsbo, and they've got a great bakery.
They do.
Up there. So, anyway, he graduated from the University of Washington with a Bachelor of Arts and Sciences in Interdisciplinary Visual Arts, where he studied drawing, painting, sculpture, and photography. He transitioned his studies from fine arts to graphic design, and upon graduation, quickly landed a role in a leading design firm in Seattle. While there, he was working with a wide variety of clients, from small nonprofits to global Fortune 500 companies. In 2013, he went off on his own and launched SEMA Creative, shortly followed by co-founding Libro.fm with fellow University of Washington alumni Mark Pearson and Carl Hartung.
Go Dogs.
Hartung, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Very good. Nick is passionate about delivering high-quality design and exceptional customer service. His work with Libro.fm is geared towards providing small businesses a way to compete with large monopolies and to give people a choice in who they support when they spend their money. Welcome, Nick Johnson.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Well, good. Well, Nick, tell us a little bit about how you got into Libro.fm.
Libro came about 3-4 years ago. I used to work for a large design firm in Seattle, and I was on a track to become partner, but it was taking up a little bit more time in my life than I wanted to, and I wasn't seeing my family enough, so I decided to go out on my own and start my own design business. Around that same time, this opportunity for Libro popped up with a couple really good friends from college, people who I'd always wanted to start a business with anyways. We just never quite had the right idea. So I kind of started two businesses at the same time, and am now in the process of deciding which one I want to focus my attention on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's got to be a tough choice. And so what is Libro.fm's main focus?
Basically, what we're trying to do is we're trying to give independent bookstores around the country a way to participate in digital audiobooks. Digital audiobooks are growing by about 35% a year. They're the largest segment of publishing that's in terms of growth right now. And they have, prior to us, no way to participate in those sales. Mm-hmm. And so we're basically trying to open that up for them.
And you're going, the route you're going is through these indie bookstores.
Exactly.
And, you know, Nick and I had a chance on the way over to talk a little bit, and I learned a lot, and I want him to share this part of it. You know, you'd think that audiobooks that have been around for a long time, that there was kind of this process, but you guys are unique, that you are probably about the only game in town for these small retail, or not often small, but just these independent bookstores. Can you talk about the process?
Yeah, basically, people are starting to listen to audiobooks digitally a lot more. About 85% of audiobook sales are digital, as opposed to CD or whatnot. You know, with a podcast, that people are just listening to content a lot more, and a lot of more younger people are listening to content. The way it works right now is there's really only one player in the game, and that's Audible.com, which is owned by Amazon. And a lot of people want to listen to these audiobooks, but they also want to support their local bookstore, and there's no way to do that. So they're listening through Amazon, but they want to support their store, and there's just a disconnect there. That's what we're doing, is we're jumping into there, and we're saying, hey, you want to enjoy digital audio, we can provide that for you, and you want a way to support your local bookstore, we can do that too.
You know what it makes it, you know what it reminded me of? If you remember the movie, the Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks movie, You've Got Mail,
yes,
and the little bookstore in the yep. corner, all of a sudden I see Nick walking in to these little bookstores and talking to Meg Ryan or somebody that looks like Meg Ryan, say, you can compete with that behemoth.
That's it.
You know, is that really what we're talking about here?
Yeah.
At least in the audiobook.
In the audiobook realm, yeah, that's basically it. It's saying that, hey, you can offer the same product that they offer, the same price that they offer, but people can support you now. And for the bookstore, it doesn't cost them anything to do it. To sign up to us, they just sign up. And people can now support them, and they can participate in this.
Well, so the question that I've got for you, Nick, comes to you from the fact that we've had some publishing company owners on Shrimp Tank, as well as, of course, both myself and Dan are authors, published authors. But I don't believe, Dan, none of your books are in audio format, are they?
They are not.
Nor is mine. So could you share a little bit about how that process is, and then how is it that you can have these multiple distribution channels? And if Audible is the 800-pound gorilla, what sort of, you know, muscle do they have to have exclusivity on certain books?
Well, first and foremost, I'll answer your last question first. They are the 800-pound gorilla. I don't want to badmouth them by any stretch, but they do have a lot of clout in the industry, and they do a lot of exclusive deals and a lot of things of that nature, which we would rather not happen just because we think people should have their content everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So to your first question, in terms of how can you get your book in our service, we don't do any of the recording. We don't do anything like that. We take the recordings from the publishers, and then we will sell them. The same recording that you would get at Audible, you'd also get from us or any of the other services. So it would be up to your publisher to handle recording the audio or working with another party that has digital rights to record the audio. Then you can get that service to us, to Audible, to wherever. I mean, we don't necessarily want exclusive content ourselves either. We just want everyone to have the content available.
Now, I was on your website, you know, doing a little research before coming in. I noticed you have an app.
Yes.
And so is that the ideal way then? If I become if I do this individually, if I go on and become a member of Libros, I can get the app and then I can download the book, and that's where I get the book from?
Yes, and that's the easiest way. We have an app for Apple and Android, and if you buy a book through the website or through the partner store's website, that book will instantly appear in the app and you can listen to it. One of the big differences between us and other services, though, is that our books are DRM free, which means digital rights managed free. So you can listen to our book through our app if you want to, but you also have the ability to download the actual MP3 files and listen however you want. Now, a lot of our competitors, they're DRM managed, which means you have to listen through their app or on one of their devices, but we don't have any restrictions like that.
Right. So if I'm buying it from Audible, many cases, once I purchased it through them, I'm using their player, and that's it. And if for
only
some
on
reason,
what devices they have, and
right,
so on and so forth.
Okay, and if I'm kind of tied,
and if you cancel your account with them, you lose it.
Right. Versus the whole issue that if I bought back in the old days,
a physical
right,
book,
physical. Well, I was actually going to say a CD.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Physical CD. Yes.
Right. I own it. Right. It's mine, and I can do with it what I want. I can move it around to the various different devices that can play that. I can upload it to.
That's how ours works. Is anything that you can play an MP3 on, just like a traditional music file, you can play one of our files on. Now, the app, like I said, is the easiest because it's instant and it's free, but you're not forced to do that.
That's excellent.
So you have a combination then of B2B.
Yes.
Sales, because you're dealing with the bookstores, but you can also have a little bit of an aspect around B2C, dealing with the direct customer. Are you going to be putting together any type of membership type things?
Yes. So the company is pretty new. We've only really been active for the last 9 months or so, and we've been doing what we call a la carte sales. So you come, you buy one book or multiple books, and that's it. We will be launching in the next 6 weeks or so a membership service where you get your first book for 95 cents, and then every month thereafter it's $14.95, and you get one credit to use on a book, no matter the price of the book. So if it's a $25 book, you still get it for your membership price. Then there's other benefits, additional discounts on books and things of that nature. But basically, it's going to mirror the pricing of some of our competitors, but you know you're supporting your local bookstore while you're doing it.
So how do you choose a bookstore to support?
The easiest way is, first of all, you find out if they're one of our partner stores, which we have about 230 now across the country, which in 9 months we're doing pretty well. And you could follow one of their links through their website, through their social media channels, through in-store. They'll have it on different materials. And when you go to our site through their store, you'll see their logo now appears on instead of ours. And when you create your account, you affiliate yourself with that store. So even if you come back to the website at some other time not following one of their links, you're still affiliated with the store, still supporting that. And the only way that changes is if you change to another store.
So we are visiting with Nick Johnson. So we're going to take a short break to hear more from our sponsors. We'll come back with Nick for our hot or not section of the show, where we're going to find out if it's hot or not to work with, to be in business with friends. Don't walk away. We will be right back with more of the Shrimp Tank.
The Seattle Shrimp Tank is brought to you by Cornerstone Financial Strategies. Financial planning is a lot like owning a sports team. If there's no one coordinating the team members, each will do what they do best individually, but lose as a team. Why? No one knows what the other's game plan is. At Cornerstone Financial Strategies, we understand that people try to hire the best professionals. Attorney, CPA, financial advisor, etc. Each for their specific expertise, but may fail to have them communicate as one team with the same goal, your desires and values. This is why at Cornerstone Financial Strategies, we offer values-based comprehensive financial planning. And since money is not the most important thing in life, we ensure your custom-catered, personalized plan will take into consideration your most important goals aligned with your most deeply held values. For more information, visit us on the web at www.liveyouridealife.com. Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, financial planning and investment advice offered through Financial Advocates Investment Management, a registered investment advisor. DBA Cornerstone Financial Strategies, LLC is a separate entity from LPL Financial.
Thank you, Amber. I feel bad for you. You know, the first part of that's great. and then it's, you know, void where prohibited, except in Alaska and Puerto Rico or whatever, so... at any rate,
images may be closer than they appear.
Yes, objects in mirror closer than they appear. Well, welcome back to the Shrimp Tank, where we interview young entrepreneurs along with some of the brightest and best CEOs in Seattle. I am Brad Berger, along with my esteemed co-host, Dan Whedon. And you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Do not forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And as Dan indicated as he took us to break for our next segment, hot or not, I think, Dan, you had a question to ask.
Yeah, let's make sure Nick knows what he's gotten himself into. This is the hot or not section, one of our favorite parts, where we're going to ask you about a business or personal or crazy topic. I'm going to ask you if it's hot or if it's not, and then you tell us why. At the end, you win absolutely nothing. So nice. on hot or not, the first one, Nick, hot or not, going into business with your friends.
Now, I... there's a good chance they're listening right now, so I probably have to be careful how I answer this. But I would say,
or maybe we should move this to plead the fifth.
I was going to say this might be plead the fifth. No, I'd say in my case it's hot. It's been a great experience. These guys, I went to school with them, met them at the University of Washington, lived with them at school and after school, and we always wanted to start a business together. You know, we used to throw around ideas and tear them apart. This was the one that we couldn't tear apart. And it's been great. You know, we had to take some time to kind of find out how to work with each other and find out what, you know, who's fits, you know, who has what strong, you know, strong points of theirs and when to kind of bend and whatnot. But it's been a really great experience.
Well, we did not get into this discussion, so I actually do not know the framework or the background about what I'm ready to ask, because I do not know if your two business partners are the only equity partners, but hot or not, taking on equity partners.
If it's the right people, I think it's hot. You know, if for us, when we're self-funded, you know, so that's, we're bootstrapping this. And so when you don't have a ton of cash, you know, you sometimes need to bring on partners who can bring something to the table. And sometimes equity is the best choice for that if it's the right person. So I think it's, of course, depending on the situation, but for us, it's hot.
Okay, so hot or not, I'm gonna actually give you an option to choose which one is hotter. What's hotter than notter? A business plan or a strategic marketing plan?
You know, I knew you guys were going to ask this. I heard you ask Michelle Doyle, I believe, a month ago this question. I have never been a business plan guy. I guess I've never really been a plan guy in general. I do it much more by gut feel. But I think my business partner, Mark, would probably say a strategic marketing plan. for us in this situation, that's kind of more the direction we're going. As far as I know, we don't even have a business plan at Libro, but we definitely have more of a strategic marketing plan.
Well, before I ask my next question, because I do want to get into the other side of what you've created as well, Nick, and I'll just make a comment about business plans, because this is clearly an area that both you and I, Dan, know quite a bit about, working with businesses and working with business owners. I mean, we interview many of them here, and we work with them professionally. We are business owners ourselves. When I was in the corporate world, one of the primary problems with business plans is, you know, they are this massive exercise that takes months and months to create, and you end up with this, you know, beautifully bound document that typically is, you know, the size of a ream of paper, and then everybody is so exhausted at the end of having to work at it, it gets put up on a shelf and never referred to again. That's when I was introduced to something called the one-page business plan. And I will share with you that for all of our listeners, if there's any advice that I could pass along, is that would be a good book. I don't know if it's available on audio, but the one-page business plan, and there's several versions of it. There's one for entrepreneurs and a very different types of industries. It would be worth checking out. So you're the business owner involved with two businesses, and I know that we've talked up to this particular point about Libro.fm, but I would like to talk a little bit about your other business, SEMA Creative.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
It's interesting. I started it about 4 years ago when I left the firm in downtown Seattle. I wanted a little bit more freedom, mainly for my commute. I had a very long commute across the ferries and whatnot, and I wasn't originally planning on going out on my own. But I met with a couple mentors and past clients, and everyone said, you know, you could do this. You got the skills for it. So I did, and it's been an amazing success, more than I could have imagined. And I do kind of high-level branding and marketing for large and small businesses, primarily in the Seattle, Bellevue, L.A. region, not really over on the Kitsap Peninsula where I'm at. Why I say it's been a little bit interesting is that it's been, like I said, more successful than I could have imagined, and it's been a couple of years of kind of building that success and building that momentum. And now I'm frantically pumping the brakes, trying to actually not completely shut that business down, but dramatically show it down, slow it down, so I can focus on Libro. So it's kind of weird that I'm kind of purposely shutting down this really successful business, but that's just because I feel like Libro has so much potential.
Well, you know, and I brought up reinvention early on, and I think this is a reinvention, and one of the and I'll kind of put this into a hot or not, I guess, hot or not, reinventing yourself as an entrepreneur when it's right for you. And I think I know what the answer is going to be, but talk about it.
Yeah, I'd say it's very hot. You know, I know one of the themes of the show is a lot of people come on here saying, didn't think of myself as an entrepreneur. And I certainly didn't when I went out on my own. It was, even though I come from a family of entrepreneurs, my dad, as you know, Dan, he hasn't worked for himself for quite a long time. I just kind of fell into it without really much planning. I just thought, hey, I can make this happen. And then it did with SEMA. And then all of a sudden I got involved in Libro. And it's like, oh, now I have two businesses. And it's just something I kind of fell into. But to your point, it's all happened at the right time in my life. The changes going on in my life, the sort of, you know, the success of SEMA has given me a certain amount of financial freedom to explore Libro. If I didn't have the success of SEMA, I wouldn't have been able to do Libro.
And, you know, I just wanted to mention one of the cool things about that, and I've seen reinventing my own consulting practice over 11 years, is you don't really have to ask permission. And it's one of the beauty things about this is you say, you know what, I want to try this. And you have the conversation really with yourself, and it's one of the beautiful things about being an entrepreneur.
To a certain extent, I definitely have to ask permission or at least have the discussion with my wife.
Oh, okay, that's yes.
Because she
is hot or not.
Hot or not. keeping your significant other involved, very hot. Yeah, she has been amazingly supportive of all these different changes I've made. And they've had a certain amount of risk to them, and you know, financial risk, insurance, dental, all that sort of stuff factors into it. And you know, actively trying to shut down SEMA Creative has a lot of, you know, potential risk to it. And she's been really, really supportive of all of that. So
Let's say you have fewer stakeholders, but maybe one very large stakeholder involved.
That is it. That
well,
is
we,
it.
Well, we, you know, clearly one of the things we know, Nick, is that Libro.com.
FM.
Excuse me. Thank you.
Yes.
Libro.fm. Three partners involved in that. SEMA Creative. How many folks are there?
That's just me.
Okay. So that's that.
A lot of freedom there.
For our listeners who are probably thinking to themselves, well, why shut it down? Why not just delegate it off to the other individuals involved? But clearly part of that success has been you and your involvement and what you've been able to bring to the table.
What I found with SEMA is that, first of all, I have very little overhead, which has been great for the business. When it first started, I considered bringing on more people, and I used a lot of contractors for different things. And frankly, I just couldn't find people who can do things at the level I wanted to or the level I can do myself. Then also, realizing that if I brought on more people, that's more management, that's payroll, that's less freedom for myself. And SEMA was as successful, like I said, more successful than I expected it to be the way I was currently running it. And it gave me all sorts of freedom to work when I wanted to work, which tended to be too much, but also to be able to see my kids, take a random day off and go on a field trip, that sort of stuff. And I knew if I grew SEMA to a certain extent, I'd lose some of that freedom. So I purposely chose to keep SEMA small.
Well, one of the powers of obviously being an entrepreneur and being in that position is it's a skill set that clearly you have. You know, it's your choice, right? Like it is for all entrepreneurs. Do I continue to market and grow? Which obviously this is something that you know well about. Do I pare back my portfolio to just the key elements of it, the key players in there, keep that going and keeping it fresh and alive. So that'll be interesting to see how that develops. In a future show, we might have to ask you how that turned out.
Well, it's interesting, in the conversation over, one of the things that, Nick, you mentioned, and you can talk a few minutes about this, is you're not shutting it down completely because it there's a positive energy it gives you for your creative side that you think helps you with Libro.fm as well.
Very much, yeah. I'm a creative sort. I studied fine arts, and I need to have a creative outlet. And I love working for Libro, and I love doing all the creative for Libro, but it is one color palette. It is one font choice. It is, you know, one kind of visual language. And I need kind of more than that. So I'm definitely slowing SEMA down, but I don't think I'm going to get rid of it anytime soon. What I've mainly done is got rid of a lot of my larger clients, my Fortune 500 companies and things like that. And I'm still doing work for smaller businesses that I just really enjoy working for. And they're not potentially my most profitable clients, but they're ones where I just enjoy working on them, and it's a little bit of a visual break from Libro.
So I wanted to ask you a little bit about Libro.fm's clientele. Since we're talking about clientele, it's a great segue, because you mentioned there were 230-ish.
Yeah.
Ish.
It changes on a daily basis. Grows on a daily basis.
Okay, good. That's good. It's going in the right direction.
Exactly.
Are these primarily, your prototypical, one-door bookshops, mom and pop type bookshops that are still out there? Is it, up to, 3, 5, 10 stores? I mean, are they small chains? Are they individual? All of the above?
All of the above. What I've learned about independent bookstores is they are truly independent and they come in all shapes and sizes. We do have your traditional mom and pop one door store, and we also have your 10 store mega chains. Down in Texas, or your Third Place Books that has, 4 or 5 large locations now. For us, it's not really a matter of scale. It's a matter of they're independent. So we don't work with Barnes & Noble. They're not an independent. But if it's independently owned, we work with them.
That brings up a question in my mind. Is Half Price Books a local thing, or is that a national chain?
Well, there's a distinction there, because you can be a national chain and still be independent.
Be a franchise owner. Right.
Yeah. Now, I don't know about Half Price Books. I'm not 100% sure, but I know of at least one other national chain with 200-plus locations that is an independent bookstore, and it's owned independently, and we would certainly work with them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know what? It's come that time. We're ready to take another short break to hear from our sponsors, and when we come back with our guest, Nick Johnson, for our Plead the Fifth section of the show, we're going to ask Nick about men in tights. Don't walk away. We will be right back with more from the Shrimp Tank.
The Shrimp Tank is brought to you by Toro Consulting Incorporated. Dan Whedon helps small and medium-sized business owners and entrepreneurs to grow, protect, and transfer the wealth of their business to create a better life for themselves. In nearly 30 years, he's worked with well over 300 businesses in all industries around the country to exponentially improve results around revenue generation, executive development, and resiliency that assure ongoing and sustainable operations. Dan is one of a select few consultants in the world honored as a member of the Million Dollar Consulting Hall of Fame. He got there because he has helped improve the condition of so many entrepreneurs and their companies. If you'd like to know how he could do the same for you, call him. You'll be glad you did. Dan can be reached at 360-271-1592 and dan@danwhedon.com.
Welcome back to the Shrimp Tank, where we interview young entrepreneurs along with some of the brightest and best CEOs in Seattle. I am Brad Berger, along with my esteemed co-host, Dan Whedon. And you can always catch a replay of the podcast at seattle.shrimptankpodcast.com. Do not forget to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. And if you are a subscriber, or when you subscribe, that's the way that I should put that, be sure to make sure that you're rating us so that you provide us all the feedback, because we're very interested in knowing on how to improve the show and what you are listening to. So for our next segment is Plead the Fifth. Dan, you took us out of the last segment with an intriguing question.
Men in tights. I don't know if Nick knows where I'm going with this or not.
I'm a little concerned.
You should be. Now, one of the things I learned about Nick is that when he was at the University of Washington, he and a lot of fellow Huskies got on their bikes and rode cross-country. Rode cross country, and it was a really interesting story. And I forget, how many days was it, Nick?
63.
63 days on the road wearing nothing but tights. Okay. And so, my question for you on the first Plead the Fifth is, what is the weirdest thing that you saw in those 63 days?
Oh, gosh. I can certainly tell you I'm going to plead the fifth on the weirdest thing. The weirdest thing is not appropriate at all to talk about. So
we're not FCC ruled, you know.
Still, my kids might be listening.
Oh,
yeah. And,
okay.
I will say that.
We'll go second weirdest?
Well, I'll just kind of tease.
Okay.
So it wasn't just Huskies. There's only maybe three or four Huskies. It was actually a nationwide team of collegiate cyclists doing this philanthropy ride. But there were some of the cyclists from the South, Alabama specifically. There was a Johnny, I won't say his last name, but Johnny from one of the schools in Alabama who was on the team, was not shy about his Lycra bike shorts. And when he would see an attractive lady and his body would reflect what he was seeing, he would show it off to everybody. That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
I think that's good enough, right? I think that works.
So where did you guys ride from?
We started in San Francisco on the Golden Gate Bridge. There were three teams, a north, south, and a central team. I was on the south team. And we ended at the Washington Monument in D.C. And I think it was a little over 4,000 miles. And we were raising money and awareness for people with disability. It's called the Journey of Hope. Still happens to this day. Huh. Google it and check it out. It's a really, really cool ride and does a lot of great things for people with disabilities.
I can only imagine what the northern and southern route. What time of the year was this? So
it's during the summer. I was on the south team.
So warm.
He's on the south team.
36 days straight of 100-degree weather. And I think the hottest I remember it getting was Bullhead City. I think it was 123 degrees.
Where's Bullhead City?
Arizona or Vegas, somewhere right in there. They all kind of blend together. I remember that day, though, I remember drinking 13 bottles of water and never using the restroom.
Wow.
Yeah.
So here's a Plead the Fifth question for you, and that is white really the best color for a Bronco?
No, definitely not. Especially if you had a older full-size Bronco. Definitely don't have white now. You get too many OJ references. Now, my 1970 classic Bronco is silver and beautiful.
Well, that's exactly why I asked the question, because we always like to interject a little bit of personal passions. And in our pre-show, when we were talking a little bit about Nick, he's a car guy.
Yeah.
I have a car guy past as well.
Yeah.
And certainly have an appreciation for that. And understand you have a couple of cars.
Well, my first car ever was a 1966 Mustang that my dad bought me, and we worked on quite a bit. And unfortunately, I sold it for college, which I still regret, but college was probably a good decision. I now have a 1970 Bronco, as I mentioned, a 1965 Mustang, and then a little 2015 Italian Vespa. So it's kind of covering the whole range, but I would have plenty more cars if I could. I just don't have the garage space. And again, my wife probably wouldn't let me go for that.
So I have a plead the fifth. You know, we're all over technology. We talked a little about technology early on. We're on a podcast. You're doing books on audio. Plead the fifth. Is technology becoming too powerful in our lives?
I'm not going to plead the fifth on it. I'm going to say, yeah, I think it really is. You know, part of, technology is fantastic, but you do get so reliant on it. My entire business, both of them, are reliant on technology. As you talked about at the beginning of the show, United Airlines shutting down for hours because of being reliant on technology. I really like it when I can take my kids, which are, they're 5 and 8, when we can take them to the beach or to the woods or camping and there's no technology around and they can still have fun and be entertained and not complain because they can't watch this or do that or whatnot. I do think we're getting a little bit too reliant on it.
Yeah, that unplug time, even though we're talking to somebody whose business is relying on you being plugged into something.
But the interesting thing, Brad, is his really still is an escape.
Sure it is.
It's an escape, and I think in that case... that's one of the places that technology really can become a great thing for somebody.
And while I know that they're your competitor, I think Audible.com, at least in their advertising, they've done have done a phenomenal job bringing that point to bear, which is it's really an opportunity for you to escape your current reality or whatever it is that you're currently doing and focus on something else.
They do a great job with their marketing. I don't, you know, yes, they're a competitor, but what they're doing is they're raising the awareness of audiobooks, which is fantastic. And, you know...
Well, you said, what is it, 35%
growth?
Growth. In what period?
1 year.
In 1 year.
2015, wow. 2016, 35% growth compared to ebooks, which is down by about 16%. So it's a growing market, and we think a lot of people are going to discover audiobooks through Audible, and that's great. We just want them to kind of fall in love with audiobooks and then see that they can support their store and switch. That'd be perfect.
Sure. So this is a statistic that you may know, and you touched on it briefly in a comment that you made earlier. What's the demographic of the audiobook market?
Great question. Traditionally, people think it's generally an older demographic and tends to be more female, but that's really changing. It's really... pretty split now between men and women, and it's getting much younger. Our own demographic at Libro.fm, 49% are under 40 years old. So it's quite a bit younger. Yeah, it's kind of unexpected. And my personal opinion is why that's happening is that the younger generation is used to having a music player in their pocket, audiobook player, podcast player, whatever you want to say. And they basically have their earbuds in all the time, and they're listening to Taylor Swift or Justin Bieber. As their tastes change, they're listening to longer format content. Introduced in, you know, podcasts, for instance. And then as their tastes continue to change, they're listening to even longer format, which are audiobooks or some combination of all those. But I think that's what it is a younger generation is used to listening to content and their tastes are changing and they're kind of discovering longer form content like podcasts and audiobooks.
I can only imagine for those individuals who still have cassette players, they're probably still listening to books on tape, literally.
Yeah, literally.
I think that's books on tape. I think fall into the other category. Of audiobooks, which is about 1%. I think CDs are around 13-14%.
The rest have Red Fox on cassette.
Yeah,
still,
yeah,
so.
The comedian. But yeah, it's about 85% of audiobook sales now are digital.
I have a very important plead the fifth, and you're gonna like this, Brad,
okay.
Because I think it's important, and we're gonna see if Nick will plead the fifth. Nick, what are the chances that you can get Morgan Freeman to be the voice for my book and for Brad's book? Because we'd like Morgan Freeman. Can you make that happen?
Plead the fifth would mean that I don't want to answer. I could flat out just say no. No, I cannot make that happen.
Do you know Morgan Freeman?
No, I do not.
Oh, okay. So I was wondering if there was some sort of connection.
No, I just thought...
He's like his godfather or something.
Somehow or other, if Morgan Freeman read our book, it would help us.
It would help, for sure.
Well,
profoundly.
How about James Earl Jones?
Again, no. I could hook you up with some great authors, but or narrators.
Who do you know?
Because I will tell you that if I could get James Earl Jones to read my book, my kids would think I was the coolest if Darth Vader was reading my book.
So you guys are getting spoiled. Your last couple guests, they knew people. They knew the quarterback, Michelle Ross Perot. I don't know anyone. You know, no one.
You know us. Right.
I know you guys.
Yeah, so now you're
no one of any scale, I guess.
Well, that was a little bit. That was a blow right to the heart.
I don't have that clout. Maybe ask me in a couple of years. Okay. And I'll have some more pull.
I like to ask this question because you obviously have experience in this area, Nick. You're running essentially two successful companies. You stood up out of passion and purpose for what you believe in. What tips, whether it's one, two, a list of five, David Letterman, top 10, however you want to put it, what would your advice be to aspiring entrepreneurs?
Oh, gosh, there's lots of things I could kind of think about. But if I had to pick one thing that was pretty universal and is very universal to both businesses I've started and the business I was involved in before I went out on my own, is serve your client. Really serve your client. I think a lot of my success at the design firm I was with is because my clients liked working with me because I went above and beyond with them. I think with SEMA Creative, the same thing. A lot of people, I didn't really do any marketing for SEMA because people had heard about me one way or another, and it was all just word of mouth traffic, and that's because I served them really well. And then especially with Libro, those independent bookstores, we are just trying to go so above and beyond and serve them so well that is where our success has been, because it's a very tight-knit community. They all talk, and if you don't do right by someone, other people are going to find out. And so, whatever your business is, if you can really serve your client, that's key.
You also mentioned, which is a recurring theme, so I'm just going to bring it up again, the importance of life balance.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? That sure. Largely weighed into, I think, part of your decision to go from working for somebody to working for yourself.
Yeah, I'd say it was probably the largest thing that factored into when I decided to go out on my own. And it's constantly a struggle. You know, I try to put a lot of time into my businesses. I try to put a lot of time into philanthropy. And then, of course, I try to put a lot of time into my family. And sometimes that stuff gets a little bit out of whack. And I know, for instance, I don't know, 6 months ago or so, it was getting really out of whack. I was doing too much philanthropy and too much business and not enough family time. And you kind of got to, step back and look at, hey, where do you want to put your time and effort? And then, readjust things accordingly.
So I think we have time for one more question before we wrap it up. I guess my question for you is, I've actually just in this short time learned a ton about audiobooks, and I've never would have considered myself an audiobook listener. However, I don't think I would have ever considered myself a phone reader at some point. Mm-hmm. What would you say to people who are hearing this for the first time as far as considering stretching themselves out and the value of an audiobook?
I think the first thing I would say is don't think of just commuting. A lot of people think, I listen while I'm in the car. Certainly you can, and a lot of people do, and of course traveling on airplanes and whatnot. But what I really discovered is that you can listen to audiobooks or podcasts all the time when you're gardening, when I'm tinkering on my vehicles. I actually have a set of waterproof iPods or a little shuffle so I can listen while I'm swimming. I mean, you can listen all the time. And it's a great way to kind of use what would more or less be dead time, folding laundry, doing the dishes, cleaning the house, vacuuming, whatever. There's a really great way to kind of take these times that you really can't accomplish much and accomplish something, either learn something or just escape a little bit.
And maybe when you're sitting in traffic, especially around Seattle,
there's no traffic in Seattle.
Yeah. You're having a chance to listen as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's the low-hanging fruit that everyone thinks of, but there's a lot of other times. Yep.
Well, Nick, we want to thank you so much for coming on the program today. And for folks who want to get in touch with you or learn more about your company or companies, how can they get more information?
I think the first thing is go to Libro.fm. That's the URL. And check us out. We have a list of all of our partner stores. So if you are interested in experiencing digital audiobooks, find a store that you want to support on that list and try it out and know that your money is... you're voting with your money and you're doing something good and supporting some small businesses.
Excellent. Well, our next show will be on Wednesday, February 8th, and we will be interviewing Sean and Tom Jones, who own and operate TV Jones. Make sure you check out all the replays on seattle.shrimptank.podcast.com.
All I was going to say is I'm going to see if I can have them bring some guitars with them. So that'll be a fun show.
I'm looking forward to that. And I always want to make sure that as we close out today, we remind people that to become a shark, we all start out as shrimps. Shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general, from the front I'm a leader. The charge like a federal fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.